Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is a very special episode. One, we are going to continue with the ongoing mailbag questions, so many of them that we could not answer them all in one episode, so we'll continue to dive into those, and some very big news from one of our own. I'll get to that in just one second. Greg Ducharme is here. Greg, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for having me, as always.
I always like that Greg re-welcomes us as well.
Yes.
It's always a nice
and
touch.
He's so polite, too. He's always thanking us for having him.
I'm very happy to be here. It's a great honor and quite frankly, a privilege. So I'm really excited for tonight. We got some great news that has nothing to do with me, and that's why I'm keeping it polite. So let's proceed.
Let us proceed, because the man of the hour, that's him. That's Kyle Porter. He is right there. And KP, the reason we're running late is because we were actually talking about your brand new book that will be available officially Tuesday, depending on when you're listening to this, Tuesday the 7th. Is that correct?
That's right. Tuesday morning. I need to hide the page right now because we got people watching. But Tuesday morning, you can go to anormalsport.com. And purchase my book about the golf year. You guys just got like a 12-second preview of it, so
yeah.
I'm still hoarse from this weekend from the Oklahoma State Baylor game, and I've been trying to grind out this book. But yeah, I'm really excited about it because it's like remember the Chess and Hadley thing from the Wyndham? He's like, yes. I'm emotional because I care, and that's how I feel about this book. Is I'm very proud of it and excited about it because I care about it, and I put my heart into it, and I hope people enjoy it.
Yeah, so we were scrolling through the pages and having a great time before we went hot here. So again, it's anormalsport.com. You can actually use a promo code. Kyle, very generous, offering up this promo code, which is FCP, as in First Cut Podcast, FCP, which I assume, Kyle, will get you some sort of discount.
Well, I had to do it in honor of my bet with Immelman. So I did 25% in honor of the 25 wins that JT is gonna have over the next decade. So
now
FCP, yeah, here we go. There it is.
So if you're watching on YouTube, producer Jacob has upped the generosity, because he is saying if we can get to 50 likes on this video, right? So you're here right now. Click the like button. If you have a question, go ahead, throw it in the chat. That helps too. Producer Jacob is going to reach into his own pocket, probably pull out a CBS Sports credit card and purchase a copy of Normal Sport for someone watching right now. So that is very generous of Jacob. So 50 likes will give that away. But Kyle, this is a bit that you do on Twitter.
Yeah.
But it has actually turned into a true, real 160-something page book. How did this come to be? Like, why does this exist? What in the world is it? Like, give us the synopsis here.
Yeah, so it actually started earlier this year, and I write about this in the book a little bit, but I was on a road trip with my family, and I was talking to my wife, just, you know, I mean, you guys have to listen to about a tenth of what she has to listen to.
A saint. I can't even.
Yeah, it's tough, but I was like, hey, I was talking about golf. She's not really into it, but she gets enough from me that she knows what's going on. And I was like, do you remember who won the Masters this year? And that's something that she would normally know. And she was like, I have no idea. And I started to realize that so much happens in such a short period of time in the golf world that I really wanted to document it for posterity and for entertainment, because it's, you know, we're doing all this stuff like in the moment, live, reacting, all the different ways that we do it. We rarely look back and contextualize things. To look back on Phil's PGA win and be able to contextualize that and to kind of frame it over the course of golf history was, for me, a ton of fun alongside like the really irreverent, hey, Bryson saw three discs in the sky and nobody really thinks this is a big deal type stuff.
Right.
So it was just, there's so many crazy things that happened that I had forgotten about that I tried to write about in a kind of a funny, entertaining, engaging way. So I hope people like it.
And Greg, we talk about this all the time. You know, immediately after the final putt drops on most Sundays, we are looking forward to the next week, which I feel like we miss a lot of things, whether it's those Sunday pressers, comments on Monday, just things that happen. It's so easy for us to turn our attention to something else. I've got a trip coming up. I can't wait to kind of open this up and relive the year. But we talk about it all the time that we're constantly looking forward. Maybe we should look back a little bit.
Yeah, you got to take a moment to do it, because like you said, we only have so much time to discuss these things, and we're in the know. We're kind of trying to get to everything that happens. And just in a given week, like what we saw last week, you miss out on stories. And so then you miss out on it when you come on, or if you're listening or watching the First Cut Pod, you miss out. You don't get a chance to see it. We don't get a chance to talk about it. And it's gone. It's just gone. And so I think it's really cool to go through and document these things. Like Bryson seeing discs in the sky is something we completely forgot. That's just a forgotten element until something UFO related comes up again, which you know is going to happen at some point. But you know,
momentarily seeming
right.
Yeah.
How'd you come up with the cover, Kyle? Because I love how you're standing there. You got Hideki's caddy bowing. You're standing there with your pose front and center on the cover, which is great, and that'll never be forgotten. I mean, this is a beautiful cover. What goes into this? How do you decide on these elements?
Well, I mean these were, so first of all, I got to give a shout out to Jason Page, who is the illustrator of this. He's brilliant. He's a fascinating, like the Venn diagram of people who are this good at art and this into golf, because a lot of the images there are super nuanced. That's a pretty small Venn diagram. So I was really grateful to have him working on the project. And I kind of just threw out 30, 40, 50 ideas we collaborated on of just ridiculous things that happened. My favorite one is actually the bottom right, where it's got Bryson hitting a drive over a lake of chocolate milk, because that's what he drinks after every victory, or that's what he drinks all the time. And so it's just, you know, he kind of just mashed all those together, and we came up with this. Our vision for it was kind of like the New Yorker style of like, I don't really even know how to describe it, but when you see a New Yorker photo, you know what it is. Yeah. Like, you know what the image is.
You know it when you see it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a little bit of what we tried to do here. And really, Greg, Bryson was the through line. Like, there's a ton of tiny little images that are kind of put into the book throughout the season. I thought it was going to be a Spieth through line, like the roller coaster, but it turned out to be Bryson, which is, you know, I think he was kind of the through line of the entire year.
You know, at a first glance, sorry, Rick. No, at first glance, when this is a little smaller on my screen, I thought the Bryson was, I thought that was a Phil logo. And you zoom in a little bit and it's brilliant. It's very clear what moment that was. So that is, it's really cool. And you're right. There is a lot of nuance in there. So I love it.
It was, go ahead.
You tweeted out the chapter names, right?
I think so. Okay. I've got them in front of me. Do you want me to read them?
No, I was just going to say I didn't want to give anything away, but just the fact that there is 3,200 words on something called Islands Party, which I can only imagine is Jordan Spieth related, is like, has got my juices flowing in a way that I can hardly describe.
Well, wait till you get to chapter 10 when I go 11,000 words on the only event that matters, which is the one at Whistling Straits.
There you go. Well, spoiler alert, 11,000 words on that. Starting Tuesday, December 7th, you can go to anormalsport.com and you can purchase this book that Kyle Porter has poured 61,000 words into, which is probably more than I've written and typed in my entire life. He did it in an entire book. You could use the promo code FCP. Just pay full price. Kyle can tell you whatever you want. Just pay full price for it. Support Kyle. Support what everybody's doing. It's 15 bucks. It'll be well worth it. But yeah, KP, congratulations. We're very excited, brother.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I obviously included everybody on this podcast and just thanks in the book for making all this super fun. You know, it's a job, but it's also like, I can't believe we get to do this every day type thing. And you guys are a huge part of that. So I'm grateful for that.
We are going to hit the mailbag. We're going to answer your questions both in historic form and in live form. So if you're here on YouTube and you want to drop your questions in right now, we'll get to them. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back. All right, let's dive into these mailbag questions because there were too many for the last time we tried to do this. So we're going to rock and roll again. If you're here on YouTube with us right now, drop your questions. We will answer as many as possible. This first one is addressed to me, but I do not believe I am the person to answer it. So that says, question Rick, what is the history of the podcast, how it got started? How did you choose those six to be a part of the team? Hope to hear an awesome answer. And here, how about this? David says he would buy some swag if we have it. It is available at CBS Sports Store. I don't know what the website is. Google CBS Sports Store. You can find First Cut swag. You'll find it. It's all there. But I don't know this. So I know KP. We could either bring in KP or we could bring in Jacob on this as well. This podcast certainly predates me by a while.
Yeah. Jacob, you want to jump in or you want me to take it?
I was going to say, you could probably take it. You were here. The podcast predates me as well.
Yeah.
Well, then it's yours, Kyle.
So it was, it started back in like 2017, I think, somewhere around there. And Chip Patterson, who covers college football for CBS Sports, it was basically me and him for the first, when did you come on, Rick? End of 19?
President's Cup. Yeah. December 2019.
So it was me and him for a year and a half, basically, and we had a ton of fun with it. We didn't really know what we were doing. Some people might say, you still don't really know, Kyle. I can't even talk. I'm doing all these podcasts this week. I'm doing like this media tour for my book.
The media blitz.
I can't even speak. But no, Chip and I the CBS really had this initiative back, I think, again, 2017 to – build out their podcast content. And for golf, it's basically, I've just been the main golf writer at CBSSports.com for the last 9 years. So Chip will help out during majors. Kyle Boone will help out during majors. So they threw Chip on, me and him just kind of hashed it out, but he was spread thin. Like, college football, as we've seen over the last 3 weeks, is completely insane. So I think it was a great benefit to him for you guys to all come on, and Rick's obviously been a great host to do that. I was hosting and I wasn't very good at it, so it was nice for me just to get questions lobbed at me that I could say insane things about and not have to clean up the mess like Rick does afterwards.
And he does a good job of it.
Oh, I appreciate that. The dynamic though, Greg, because people ask us this a lot, is like the cast of characters that we kind of rotate in this show. I mean, it's strategic. The idea that we can bring on, you know, you and Sia for a DFS preview, and Mark, who might be out on the course, and Kyle, whatever insane take he's going to go with this week, but he's got his finger on the pulse of everything that's going on in the golf world. Like, this is a strong dynamic that allows us to get a lot of different viewpoints very quickly from people in different areas of expertise.
Yeah, and we really do have a ton of different areas covered. And fortunately, they all include entertainment and fun, which Kyle mentioned. That's what's so important about this and why I enjoy it so much, is we come on here with our different perspectives, different viewpoints, agree, disagree, but we always have fun doing it. And it takes all that happens, all the things that are documented in Kyle's book, and it allows us to hash them out and think about it. And I know my background is in instruction and DFS, right? So I start off as a coach, and I get into the game analyzing players and seeing what happens from a coach's perspective, similar to Mark, so though it was slightly different twist on it. And then coming in here and hearing what you have to say, Rick and Kyle, what your viewpoints are as a writer, it has really helped me expand my mind. And I think that's a really cool aspect to it. But yeah, it's a well-rounded group, and it's cool to be a part of.
Thank you for the question, loyal listener. David, the swag you're looking for is available at store.cbssports.com. Thank you very much for rocking that. Here's an interesting one in terms of winning on the PGA Tour. Why don't we hold Matt Fitzpatrick and Tommy Fleetwood to the Tony Finau, Ricky Fowler standard? KP, we'll start with you here. Winning is something, and lack thereof winning is something that we really assign to guys, and we say it's been too long or they're not winning enough. I don't know how much of that is going on in these players' heads, but I do think it's probably true. We give Fitzpatrick and even Fleetwood to an extent a pass that we might not have given to Tony Fowler and Ricky Fowler.
Tony Fowler, it's like the same guy, right?
Tony Fowler sounds like a great made up golfer. So I actually ran across a column from Shane Ryan, who's one of my favorite writers, as I was researching for this book. And he was talking about kind of the Lee Westwood paradox of Westwood at Royal St. George's became the all-time leader in major championships played without a win. Mm-hmm. I think he's got 88, 89, somewhere around there. And it's hard. The tension there is like, you got to be good enough to play in 88 of them.
Right.
And then you got to be bad enough to not, I mean, it relatively bad enough to not win one. And so I think the reason we don't hold Fleetwood and Fitzpatrick to the Finau Fowler thing is they're not as good. Like Fowler and Finau are just better at golf. And so it would be like saying, well, Jason Kokrak's never won a major compared to Lee Westwood. You're like, well, I don't like, I hold Westwood to a way higher standard than I do somebody like Jason Kokrak, you know? So I think, and maybe I'm not answering that correctly, but to me, it's kind of an honor to be held to a high standard because it means you're pretty good. It means right. Fitzpatrick and Fleetwood just aren't as good as Finau and Fowler. So a lot of alliteration there.
I might even take it past just talent, and it's about the times in contention. When do you go into not a tournament, but a final round and say, okay, he should win? And Tony Finau and Ricky Fowler have gone into a lot of Sundays where we're saying, okay, this is the time they should win. It's very often that they're heavily in contention and often sometimes even favored going into the final round. Now, Fleetwood had a period of time around 2018, maybe even into 2019, where he contended a lot. And we get the Paul Azinger line, right? Where he's at the Honda Classic and he's in that position where he should win, which is rare for him. And it hasn't happened since. And he hits it in the water. And Paul Azinger says, well, look, you can win all you want on that tour, referring to the European tour, but it's different here. So I think your point's really valid there, Kyle. It has a lot to do with ability and a lot, but even more so, how often are you in that position come Sunday where you should get a win?
TL30N chimes in asking, top five ceiling players of the past 25 years, excluding Tiger. I'm not exactly sure how he wanted us to respond to this, but I'm going to frame it in this way. When every golfer is at their best, who are some of the best players in the last 25 years, Greg? We're gonna remove Tiger from the list, obviously. When they're at their best, who is the best?
Phil would be my top. He would be my top choice. Phil's best is
really. I was not expecting you to say Phil.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's shown it. When Phil's at his best, he's really hard to beat. He's a guy who knows how to win. When he gets in contention, he closes the deal. And he put it, I mean, you're talking 25 years. He won a major at 51. The guy can. The guy's good. Is really good. He was a really long hitter, and he was an elite iron player with the best short game we've seen at least since Seve. I know Tiger's short game rivals it, and there are some other really good ones. But I think Phil is the clear top choice here for this one.
See, I'm surprised, KP. Maybe I'm a bit too much towards the modern game, and maybe I would have said Dustin Johnson when he's got to go and he's hard to beat, or Rory McIlroy. But I don't know. Greg is going with Phil, and it's kind of, with what, 45 wins or whatever. It's kind of hard to deny.
So I have an actual like statistical answer here for you, because even remember, Data Golf came out with their 95th percentile thing, where you can look at like a guy's, what is that, the fifth best round that they play over the course of a period of time.
Yes.
So if you take it all the way back to the beginning of the strokes gained era,
it's about 25 years, 18 or 20.
Yeah.
Significant.
No surprise. Tiger's 95th percentile round. So his fifth best round, on average, is 7 strokes better than the field.
Yeah, that's great. I got another great Tiger stat for you here. While we're doing, just to put that into anything Tiger related in the strokes gained era almost has to be removed. So Tiger's had five seasons better than Morikawa's leading the tour in strokes gained approach last year. This is from Will Haskett. Basically, no player in the ShotLink era has ever had a single season that matches Tiger's like average season over 7 years. Like so the Tiger ShotLink stuff is absolutely insane. Sorry, that's a little nugget there. So remove Tiger, as we tend to do from these things. Who else we got?
So by the way, Morikawa, his approach play this year, strokes gained, it would have been a Tiger's eighth best season from 05 to 13.
It's eighth best in just approach.
Yeah.
And in like a 9-year period, his eighth of a 9-year period. It's stupid.
That's it. That's in the book, by the way. Check that out.
So real quick though, is that just so people are understanding, like that's how much of that is that he is he better than Morikawa is today, or is he that much better than the rest of the people he played against?
Well, it's relative. Right. I mean, that's saying he's better than the players he was playing against, right?
Right. He's gaining. Say he's gaining two shots on the field. Yeah.
I said Morikawa finished with 1.13 strokes gained on approach shots in 2020-2021. So the season, the PGA Tour season, which was the best in the world. That would have been Tiger's eighth best year from 2004 to 2013.
Stupid. Stupid.
Eighth right, best.
Remove Tiger. Okay. Who's next? Who's Tiger's next?
Rory's fifth best round in that time frame is 6.5 strokes better than the field. So Rory is your best of the best, non-Tiger edition.
Who's next? Keep going.
DJ 6.3.
Oh, I nailed them both.
Okay. Yeah, you nailed them, Rick.
Who else?
It would have been in my top five for sure.
Ron J. Hamm, also known as John Rahm. Is 5.64. Spieth is above Rahm. He's 6. This sort's weird because I think it includes some amateur data, which is just goofy. Anyway, I'll just read your top 10. Tiger, Rory, DJ, Morikawa, Rahm, Spieth, JT, Phil, Hideki, and Justin Rose.
I'm really surprised Phil's that far. He's down the list like that.
I bet Phil's fifth percentile, like his 4, is not very good.
Yeah, it's probably pretty low on the list as well. One from the chat, David. We'll run through this one pretty quick. David, what are the handicaps of each of the first cut guys? Greg, tell us what your handicap is right now.
I don't officially keep one. Play to a 0. I'm probably, because I play so little, I'm probably realistically a 1 or 2 now.
Kyle.
Oh, I'm probably I don't keep one either. I don't play enough. I'm probably like a 15.
I'm currently a 7.5. Let's guess at coaches. Do you think coach is better or worse than 22?
I bet coach smashes the ball.
I guarantee he smashes it. Yeah.
I bet he's between you and me. I bet he's like an 11 or something.
And what do we think Mark's is? Correct.
I bet he's like a five, four. Yeah.
No, I think he's bad. I think he's
that's pretty strong.
I bet he's a zero. Somewhere between zero and
no
two.
No way.
No, he's not. I don't think.
I don't think he plays it. I don't know.
Have you seen it? Have you seen his videos that he posts? Have
you
seen
what do you think speed? He is, Jacob?
I honestly think he's probably close to like a maybe like an eight.
Yeah.
Really?
You're thinking of the other Immelman, Greg.
yeah, I guess that guy's a zero.
I just texted Coach. Coach says his is like an 18.
Okay.
I can see it. I bet he just.
I would love to know what Mark is.
He's at like a charity tournament right now, so he's having a lot of fun.
Coach hits like 280-yard drives around, and then he makes like 211s also.
Yeah, he does Sam Burns does. He nearly drives the green on the par four, and then he probably leaves it down there for three shots and then, you know, has to get it up and down from there. Speaking of Sam Burns, Ryan wants to know, Greg, who is this year's Sam Burns? Basically, a guy that takes a big leap.
Ooh.
That's a great question.
It is a great question.
While you think about it, Greg, I'll give you a little bit of context here. Because Sam Burns, if you want to look at OWGR, Sam Burns ended last year, so almost a full year ago, was ranked 154th in the world. He's now the 13th ranked player, and I believe that's actually going to improve in the next couple of weeks here.
Yeah, it was a huge jump. And I think the cool – I've followed this story throughout this year. And the cool thing about this is the move that he made with his iron play. He was always a really good driver and a really good putter coming in, which is a great little foundation to have. When he improved his iron play, he really took a huge jump. So the guy that jumps out to me, and this might not be fair because he's 33rd in the world, but Taylor Gooch jumps out to me as a guy I think is going to have a breakout year. The problem is he's already in the middle of it. So he's so far this year, he's got a T4, a T11, a T5, a T11, and a win. Mm-hmm. And so because he's already got that win, he's already well on his way to making that move. But I expect that to keep going. I think he has a really well-rounded game, and I think he has some really high standards and some really lofty goals in front of him. I mean, I heard he wants to be the number one player in the world. I'm not sure that's realistic, but it's kind of that attitude of Patrick Reed saying, hey, I'm a top five player in the world. It's what you aspire to be and where you expect yourself to be. So I think that bodes well for Taylor. And I think he's a really, really nice ball striker who's got to get a little better off the tee. His iron play is great. And his short game and putting is really good too. So I would say he's my top guy. I'm cheating a little bit because he's already in the midst of it.
I'm going with Aaron Wise. He's 69th. I think it's going to be hard to find a guy who goes from like 125 to 10 or whatever, like Sam Burns did, unless you do what Sam Burns does, which is win a couple times or whatever and contend a bunch. Aaron Wise, who's kind of not in the middle of it like Gooch is, but like at the very start of the improvement, just a couple of starts ago, he was 105th at the Sanderson Farms. Already 69th. If he fixes the putter long-term, like he did KP in the first part of this 2022 season, he's going to be devastating. So he would be my most likely candidate.
Yeah, I think Taylor Moore, Mav McNeely are both interesting.
McNeely's a pretty high, like when he gets it going, he's a pretty high ceiling player. That's interesting.
I'm going to go, I don't know. It's a hard question. I need a list of guys. I don't have a list of guys that are in that age range because I think it matters that you're between 22 and 26 rather than if you're like Russell Henley or Johnny Vegas.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I would love to say Henley. I think Henley is like, I mean, if you look at Henley's tee to green play, the improvement year over year over year over year. It's incredible. But the opposite is true of his putter or of his short game, right? So Zalatoris, you could talk me into, although he's already what, 29th in the world or whatever?
Probably. He is number.
Is Matthew Wolf a candidate for this answer?
the best part is the answer is whatever you want it to be. So
I'll say Matthew Wolf.
Wolf and Zalatoris are back to back. They're back-to-back in the world rankings. Wolf 31, Zalatoris 32, Gooch 33, Homa 34. There's like the two guys and the two buddies. Wow.
Wolf is top 10 talent, and he's going to drop more before he'll drop out of the top 50 probably before he gets back into the top 20. But I think look at what he did in those first two majors. You know,
yeah.
Fourth at PGA, third at USO, or second at USO, wherever he finished. That's crazy at age 21. And I think he got a little buried over the last year just because he wasn't playing very well and he wasn't playing that much at all, you know?
He has he definitely has the most firepower in that group. No question.
This is a very straightforward question from Just Do It. Asks, Justin Thomas or Victor Hovland, who's going to have a better 2020? Greg, go on the record and tell us which one of these guys is going to be better than the other one. I'm sure that'll end.
That is straightforward, but it's so complicated.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers.
It is so complicated. I'm going to say Justin Thomas. And
what would you describe as like a better, like what metrics would you use to describe better year?
It's like basically a player of the year race. So okay. If you're voting for player of the year and you're going to rank everybody out, whether these guys are 1 and 2 or 6 and 7, you can have the same debate. So what'd you do in majors? What'd you do? How many wins do you have? How many top tens? What's your consistency level like? Now, Hovland's consistency level is going to be very good, I would imagine. It could be freaky good. And his win rate could be too. But I think JT has a little more upside in big events. Only because he's kind of due. He's due to win another major. I think the Masters sets up really well for him. And he gave that he shot himself out of that tournament in one hole last year. 13 on Saturday. I mean, one hole, and I think he's going to strive to answer those questions. I'm really excited to see if his putting improves after LASIK, if he sees some kind of sparks. So I'm going to very reluctantly say Justin Thomas. It's only because I feel like he's due in a major.
I'm going to go with Victor. Since he came on my podcast, he has won every event that he's played in. And if he continues that,
all credit to Rick.
I'm sure will be easy to do. If he continues that, he's going to win like 30 times next year.
Yeah, that's a pretty good projection. I think you should make a wine bet with Mark about how many over under
100% win rate. KP, break the tie. Victor or Justin?
What was the phrasing of the question?
It's very broad. It just says, who has a better 2022? That's all it says.
Well, I think, yeah, I love JT. He's so good. Like he is so good. I think I'll say Hovland. I, you know, JT's been disappointing at majors and not like basically since he won the PGA at Quail Hollow in 2017, and Hovland hasn't thrived at majors, but there's also a lot less data there. So I'll say Victor Hovland has a better 2022 than JT, which is really high praise because I think JT is going to be really good next year. I mean, shocking that I think the number five player in the world is going to have a good year, but that's a really good question. Like that's a really difficult one to kind of figure out how each of them are going to play out.
It's kind of like a coin flip, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is a great testament to both of them, quite frankly. I'm going to put a pin in it there because we have something special that we're going to record here shortly that will be out on Thursday. It's called Trivia. It's going to be amazing. Additionally, I saw a question in the chat about round by round updates returning in January. The answer to that is yes, we will be back for that. Additionally, again, one more time, go to anormalsport.com. anormalsport.com. Buy Kyle Porter's book. You can use the promo code FCP. You shouldn't. Just buy it. Otherwise, anything else before we get out of here, gentlemen?
I'm really nervous for trivia. I'm going up against a published author.
I mean, I just bought an ISBN on the internet. So it's not like that big of a feat. I haven't really thought about it until about 2 minutes before I got on, because I was so consumed with getting this book out of my head. So that's either a huge advantage or a huge disadvantage for you. We're about to find out which one it is.
I feel like this book, just writing this book for you, had you on Wikipedia way more than I was. So I feel like I'm at a disadvantage.
If anybody ever comes to my home and says, you know, your life is at stake unless you can draw Tony Finau's Wikipedia page, I mean, that's my wheelhouse. I would nail that. It'd be unbelievable. I don't know why anybody would ever say that, but
that would be,
yeah, it'd be bizarre.
They would make a movie out of it. It'd be so bizarre. All right. Producer Jacob does all the hard work behind the scenes. Thank you, Jacob. Greg Ducharme, you can find him on Twitter at the real GFD. Kyle Porter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can find me at Rick Rungood. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob? Well, all
right. Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year. You dig? Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.